Our gospel reading is actually the gospel according to John in the 20th chapter, and I think that is page 882 in your pew Bible. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the tomb. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and said to them, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they've laid him." And Peter and the other disciple set out and went toward the tomb. The two were running together, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent down to look in and saw the linen wrappings lying there, but did not go in. Then Simon Peter came, following him, and went into the tomb. He saw the linen wrappings lying there and the cloth that had been on Jesus' head, not lying with the other wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. Then the other disciple who reached the tomb first went in, and he saw and believed, for as yet they did not understand the scripture that he must rise from the dead. Then the disciples returned to their homes. But Mary stood weeping outside the tomb. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white sitting where the body of Jesus had been lying, one at the head and the other at the feet. They said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "They've taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." When she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not know that it was him. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you looking for?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you've laid him, and I will take him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him in Hebrew, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, because I've not yet ascended to the Father. But go to my brothers and say to them, I am ascending to my Father and your Father, my God and your God." Mary Magdalene went and announced to the disciples, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them that he had said these things to her. In our hearing, our speaking, our living. Steve Cottom is a young youth minister in a Catholic church in another state, a church that has a day school. So twice a week, Steve goes on Wednesdays and Fridays to about 10, 15 minutes to share a Bible story with the children, one of the cleaned up versions of the Bible stories. And he did this last year and did this on Good Friday, as usual. And he went and got his children's Bible and shared the story. It was a story called A Very Sad Day that described as best it could for children what happened that day and how Jesus died and how his family and friends were very sad. And he waited for questions and there were none. So he went back to his office to continue with his work when he got a call from the head teacher of that classroom saying, "Please come back, something's not right." And so he went back down and he arrived and the class was in pandemonium. There was one child dumping sand out of the sandbox and two others were just crying on the floor and another was tearing paper up and spreading it around, and he looked bewildered, and the teacher said, "They're really upset about Jesus." So he got the kids together in their story circle and asked what they were feeling, and they said, "Mad and sad." And he said, but our stories, we've talked about death before. Remember when Charlie's granddad died, and we talked about what that means. "This is different," they said. "Why?" he said. "Because Jesus is the best. It's not fair." But he continued, "You come to Mass every week and you hear these stories, and surely you've heard this before." And they're just staring at him, not even blinking. And there's the crucifix on the wall. And one little girl looked at it and screamed, "That's Jesus!" And he felt he was losing control of the situation. And then it occurred to him, he said, wait. "If you haven't heard this story before, you haven't heard what comes next, have you?" And again, blank stares. So he said, "Wait a minute." And he goes dashing back to his office, grabs his children's Bible, goes running back. A teacher sees him in the hall, says, "Where's the fire?" And he says, "Christ is risen." But he gets back and he sits with the children again. And he tells the story of how Jesus' friends buried him in a cave and rolled the stone across the doorway. And when they came back, the stone was gone. And the story ended, and the kids just erupted and clapping and cheering. He said it was like this miniature team of NASA scientists on a successful launch. They were so excited. And Steve walked back to his office, collapsed in his chair, and realized he heard the story himself again for the first time. Can we hear this old, old story anew, as if for the first time? How Jesus had died in a particularly gruesome manner devised by the Roman Empire, meant to control and intimidate and terrorize and hold fast to their power and authority. How wrong it all was, how they laid him in a borrowed tomb carved out of rock, and that somehow in the dark of night, in a sealed off tomb, God worked to bring forth life from death. And in the early morning, before the sun rose over the hills of Jerusalem, Mary makes her way quietly with painful determination. She finds the stone rolled away, the body gone, goes to alert the others. They come racing back to assess the situation, and then they leave. But Mary stands there. Jesus is there in the pre-dawn darkness. He calls her name, and that garden becomes a sacred space, holy ground. The trees and the flowers and the birds, the only witnesses. But Mary stood. She did not run. She refused to hide. She stood in the thick air of grief and confusion. It's a beautiful line in one of Mary Oliver's poems called "It Was Early." Oliver writes, "Sometimes I need only to stand wherever I am to be blessed." Sometimes I need only to stand where I am to be blessed. We watch these days scenes from any tragedy, a shooting, tornado, a bombing. Always people standing in shocked silence, weeping. The fire, the horrible fire at Notre Dame, seeing the faces of people just watching in disbelief. In our fast-paced world, we're not likely to miss the really bad news as quickly as it gets amplified. But we are likely to miss the resurrections, the holy. I don't know about you, but I always want things explained. I want to see the logic. I'm often in a hurry to see it and to get there. I would have been racing with the two disciples, and in my drive to have things properly analyzed, completely miss the holy, the mysterious, the luminous. The other disciples ran off, but Mary stood and became the first witness to the resurrection. She had been witness to the deepest, most horrific wound imaginable, and now was a witness to the healing of it. From the place where she was willing to stand and confront the very worst, she found new life, new and indestructible hope. Easter asks each and every one of us to stop and stand exactly where we are and breathe in the holy. I think we go along in life and stop anticipating the holy. We assume that's for other people, those spiritual types. He calls us to be witnesses to the holy in a world that often denies it. When I remember to stand still and look and listen, I find it everywhere. It sounds like Yo-Yo Ma playing Bach's Suite Number 1 for cello. At the foot of the bridge, the border between Laredo, Texas and Nuevo Laredo, as a way of honoring the connection between the two communities, a holy moment. The holy looks like something that happened years ago to Desmond Tutu, the great South African bishop. He tells of the day when he and his mother were walking down the street. He was about 9 years old, and coming toward them was a white man dressed in a black suit. These were the days of apartheid, and in those days, if a white person approached a black person, the black person was supposed to step aside into the ditch and stop and nod their head in respect. But this day, before Tutu and his mother could step off the sidewalk, the white man stepped off the sidewalk and stood and bowed his head. He tipped his hat. It was Trevor Huddleston, Anglican priest, bitterly opposed to apartheid. His mother told Tutu who he was, and that day Tutu decided become a priest. He calls it the defining moment of his life. Holy moments, resurrection moments, they don't need to be big and dramatic. They can appear anytime, any place. Simple moments when the divine finds us. I saw the resurrection the other morning as I glimpsed a young mother and a beautiful little child walking the labyrinth. And the little girl kept bending over, and I finally realized she was picking up one by one petals that had fallen from the cherry tree. And each one was a marvel. And then she gathered them up, started throwing them in the air and giggling. And it was holy. See holy in the face of Brianna. I was interviewed recently by an intern who asked me, what keeps me going? What keeps us going, especially in our work for immigration rights? And I said the usual things. I pray more than I used to, and relationships and laughter and music and chocolate, lots of chocolate. But it really comes down to this. There's an empty tomb. Violence and death and destruction and injustice don't get to celebrate in the end. all of that is already defeated. They just haven't gotten the memo yet. The forces of xenophobia and greed and corruption and abuse of power have all already lost. There's an empty tomb that defies human control and understanding, and there's a garden that calls me over and over to stop and breathe and open my eyes and ears and take it in. There's a risen one who finds me in the messes I create, in the chaos of life, in the out-of-sync moments, who comes and speaks my name and says, it's okay. Love wins in the end. It just may be that this God who raises the dead can raise the possibility that someday you will be reconciled with the person who once judged you and shunned you. This God who empties out tombs could yet empty this world of its violent ways, could even empty human hearts of resentment and rage. This God who leaves behind grave clothes can free you and me from everything that binds us. This God who calls forth life from the jaws of death can find us no matter where we run. So this morning, today, as our stomachs are growling for brunch or full of ham biscuits with nice clothes on and the kids squirming for their Easter baskets, sometime today, pause, stand where you are. And like Mary, be in the presence of the holy. They say it takes a minimum of 3 weeks to form a new habit. Easter is a season of 50 days, so we've got time. I'm challenging myself in these 50 days, and I invite you to join me to get in the habit of looking every day for resurrection, each and every day for a sign of the holy at work in this world. Post a photo on Facebook or Instagram. Write it down in a journal. Keep track of it. Share it with somebody else. There'll be a test at Pentecost. Have to warn you. The place where you stand and see may just become holy ground, an empty tomb with the stone rolled away. Sometimes, writes Mary Oliver, I need only to stand wherever I am to be blessed. Amen.